Let me know if it's not on. I think I've got a green light now. Okay. I know that we kind of went through an epilogue. The first week we went through a little bit of history and run up to it. Went through a little bit of an epilogue beforehand to get our minds in. There's still a few things as we move along to be said. Not to get off on different tangents, but I'm sure that we will. And as I said before, go ahead and if you have a comment, if you have an idea or a question, don't hesitate to ask that. Going back, if you still have the papers for the general prologue questions, and that being said also, if you don't have a copy of the questions for chapter 1, I've got a bunch of them back in on the foyer back there. And if you need one, you can raise your hand, and Jacob will be glad to go back there and pass them out. So if you need one, just let him know. The questions that I put forth, I put the verses with it, you know, just try to make it as easy as possible to see where we're going with it, because we won't spend a lot of time on the questions as we will in discussion in this class, just because a lot of it is going to have to do with philosophies on this earth and the way that Solomon handled his life and portrayed those things to us to make our life better. Going to the thought questions that we had, we understand that physical death is certain. And as you get into the conclusion of Ecclesiastes, chapter 11, verse 7 through the end of 12, he deals with death there. And we understand that everyone is going to die. Death is certain. It's going to happen. So in the thought questions, I just got to thinking, and this is why I put this down here. How many people have lived on this earth since creation? And I know that's not a number that we can, you know, come up with reasonably, but it's a lot of people. How many people are going to be on this earth for the next 2,000 years? Do you realize that 100 years from now, none of you are going to be here? Maybe the little hobbit baby back there will. But he's going to be 101 years old. But there'll be a whole new set of people on this earth. There'll be as many or more. And so life goes on. Life is going to be here, but so is death, and death is certain. So out of all the people that have lived on this earth, how many can you name? How many have you interacted with? And there's a lot of people in here that have certain type of jobs and stuff where we interact with a lot of people throughout our life. What we think is a lot of people. But whenever you look at the percentage of the people that we interact with the amount of people that are on this earth at any given time, it's just an infinite amount of people. Just a tiny, tiny percentage. And that's why it's so important to the Lord that each one of us do our part to take those tiny amount of people that we interact with and try to teach them and bring the gospel to them. How many have we met? How many have we interacted with? And how many have we done what we should for the Lord with? These are just thought questions as we go through here. And we see the futility and the meaningless and the vanity of some of the things that happen and occur with life. I was watching the news a while ago about the fires in California. And everybody's up in arms stuff. You know how many years there's been fires in California? But now we see it right away. Nothing new under the sun. And we'll see all that. And so as I study this and we go through this, you're going to start looking at things differently. And we should as Christians already. But even more, we're going to look at some of the things that we do and some of the things we've done in our lifetime. And we're going to think, why? Why did I spend that much time doing this, doing that? So, how many people are going to remember your name 50 years after you die? It's just amazing when you think about it. That, I mean, we're just a pinprick in the amount of people that have come on this earth. But yet the earth continues. The majesty of God is shown. All right. Then the last question I had on there was, how do these questions relate to Christ? And we touched a little bit on it as far as you know, us doing our part to spread the gospel and live our life as examples. But one of the other things that I meant by this question was, Christ knows and knew every single one of these people that lived on this earth. He knows all about their life, what they did. Just imagine that knowledge. And that's why when we talk in Bible classes, sometimes we say that we cannot imagine the mind of God. Most of y'all aren't going to remember 20% of what I said tonight once this is over, probably, unless you go back and listen to it. And that's why I take a lot of notes whenever I'm in the audience, so I can help learn. It just gets to my brain better. But Christ knows all, and He cares for all, and He loves all. And that's what I meant by that question. Going over to chapter 1.
The number of hair on our heads.
And I was thinking about that when I said that.
And
number of hairs on head.
How many of us can even fathom that infinite knowledge? I mean, it just blows my mind, my puny little mind, at what the Lord knows and does. And in fact, it just runs chills up your spine if you really want to look at it that way. You know, He knows everything.
It's just fantastic. Whenever you just come to the place of how great the mind of God is,
then you think about Solomon here, because he's going to be talking about, you know, the wisdom and the knowledge that he had, and the wisdom that God gave him, which was above any of the kings and the people that were before him. But yet, even his knowledge and wisdom is just nothing compared to the knowledge of God. All right, Ecclesiastes chapter 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What's the Hebrew word? I don't know if any of y'all have looked it up. The Hebrew word for vanity that's used here.
Emptiness.
Okay, emptiness is another word that we were, and I remember whenever I listened to Jacob's lesson, some of the things we brought. But the Hebrew word is hevel, H-E-V-E-L. And it means breath, vapor, smoke. And so, whenever you think about that, that kind of gives almost even a better meaning to what he's talking about life being a vapor. And we'll comment on that as we move forward. The prophet, verse 3, what profit hath a man of all his labor? which he taketh under the sun. One generation passes away, another generation comes, and the earth abides forever. The sun also arises, and the sun goes down, and hastes to his place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south, turns round to the north, it whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full, unto the place from whence the rivers come, whither they return again. All things are full of labor, man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. Keep in mind the words under the sun, and we'll talk about that in a little bit also. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new. It has been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of the things that are to come with those that shall come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things which are done under the sun. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Thinking about that word, all is hevel, all is vapor, all is breath, and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which is wanting cannot be numbered. I communed with my own heart, saying, lo, I am come of great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. And I perceived that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increases knowledge increases sorrow. So he almost seems like he's to a point to where he's depressed, where he gets to where he's looking for satisfaction. He's went through life. He's letting us know. But some of the things that he talks about is that it's being done apart from God. Anything that he wanted in life, he says. And he tells us that I sought after it. Whether it was wealth, whether it was status, whether it was knowledge, he sought after it. And then after he did all of this, he sat down and he put in writing. Which is awesome that we can look at the fact that this writing today, approximately 30 centuries later, still applies to us today perfectly. And whenever you look at that fact, it just still gives you another argument for the greatness of God. Because things don't change. And he puts it in here. This is great. We have this information. Somebody has done this, and they wrote to tell about it so that we would know. And God made it happen. Proof of wisdom of God and that He exists. He talks about a couple of different life's philosophies here. Whenever you look at life's philosophies, you think about materialism. You know, people say, what is the meaning of life? And whenever you look at materialism, it's like, what can you gather? What stuff can I get? What can I own? What can be mine? Mine. Existentialism. Life's what you make of it. Whatever you make of it. You can make a good life for yourself, make a bad life for yourself, whatever you make of it. And that's life. Positivism. Life is whatever works best for you. You just do whatever works best for you. And that's what life should be. Just do whatever's best for you. Maybe what's best for me is to take everything that you have. And you. It wouldn't be best for that person. So it's kind of different, one of those these philosophies. And then postmodernism, which is kind of generic. It's in the fact that they say, well, whatever the sum total of what you do in life and your existence and all that, that is what your life is. Well, yeah, of course, that's what you've done with your life. But they're trying to explain life, when you look at these isms, they're trying to explain life apart from God. And that's why they don't hit the mark. All these ideas and these philosophies, apart from God. So this life that is lived under the sun, which is on this earth, having been a child, you grow up, you get married, you have children, they're born, they take their first breath, they grow up, they have children, pretty soon you've got kids calling you grandpa. You go through life under the sun. And whenever you look for these philosophies of life, these meanings of life, without the knowledge of God, and not looking in the right places, then of course it's vapor, it's meaningless, it's vanity.
In view of verse 2, vanity is always vanity, he asks two questions that serves as the theme for the entire book. One is, what profit does man have in all of his labor under the sun? And the second aspect of that is in chapter 2, verse 3, the latter part, for he's pursued these things that I might know what is good for the sons of men, that they should do under the heavens all the days of their lives. This is what the book of Ecclesiastes is about. What is it profitable for me to do, and what should we be pursuing? Through the book of Ecclesiastes, he follows several different avenues, but then he comes to the conclusion, and this is what you've been emphasizing, men try it without God. But as he's pursued all these different avenues, he comes to the 12th chapter. All has been said, you know, this is the conclusion. Fear God, keep his commandments, this is the whole duty of man. One other thought, then I'll hush. And that is that the book of Ecclesiastes is not pessimistic. As you go through, there's a number of times he tells us that we should enjoy things, that we should rejoice, that we need to joy. And you just emphasize the idea of under the sun. That is what is futile. It's when we try to find meaning and purpose in life under the sun instead of finding it with God. And if we search for it with God, then these passages in the book of Ecclesiastes, where we should rejoice, where we should enjoy, that's ours from God.
Very good comment. And a lot of these comments that we make, they're going to sound a lot alike. But don't hesitate to make the comment, because that means that it's soaking in. I think that a lot of people here do understand the meaning of life and the importance of the gospel and the importance of that. So that's why it's so easy to teach this class. I wish we had more and more people in here that needed to hear this. And hopefully people will hear from our website as we go through this study. There's a lot of people in this world that need to understand this. As he goes through, he explains that there's just nothing left that he could find that's going to give him satisfaction. He's done it all, nothing left. And so we understand, like Brother Jim pointed out, life on a purely human level is going to leave us wanting more. We're born merely to die. And that's not all we're born for, but that's what a lot of people believe. There's no soul. When we're dead all over. And how hopeless is that thought? Going through life, it's already pointed out as we go through here, a lot about this life and the things that we do under the sun can be meaningless. But then to not believe in God and not have that hope of eternal life, that is one miserable person. It has to be. Nature continues and stays the same. It's just like, so it says the sun, it's going to come up. And I bet you that the day that I die, I'm not a betting man, but I'm going to bet you the day that I die, that the sun's going to come up and it's going to go down. It may be a cloudy day and you may not see it, but it's going to happen. The rivers are going to continue to flow. Everything on this earth is going to continue to happen. There's going to be a bumblebee over there in North Carolina that's going to sting somebody. I'm not going to know about it. I'm going to be gone. But it's going to continue. Think of all of the life and the nature in this earth that continues on. And yet it doesn't wear itself out. Just the amazingness of God. And as we go through this study, I don't want to get to the point where we're trying to depress everybody. We want to do the opposite, to where we understand the meaning of life, that it comes from God. First of all, God gave us this life. Hallelujah. What can I do for you, Lord? This is your life. I'm borrowing it. What do you need me to do? And then have that eternal life in heaven after this short life on earth is over. So I want us to be happy, but I want us to be able to understand these things so that whenever we get around others and we teach and we preach, we're just better equipped. There are a lot of things on this earth. When he goes and he says, I see nothing new under the sun. You know, people sit there and say, well, you know, there's a lot of new stuff since Solomon's era. You know, Solomon didn't know about TVs. He didn't know about technology. He didn't know about all these things and these big metal ships that, you know, go under the water called submarines. Yeah, there's a lot of new stuff under the sun. But there is nothing that has been done on this earth and never will be that man has created himself. Everything's been there. Now, we may find a use for something. We found a use for this magnetic material. I don't know if y'all have ever, you know, noticed that there's actual magnetism in certain objects in the ground. Gravity. Oh, we just, who was it, discovered gravity? Sir Isaac Newton, is that who it was? I'm not sure. I'm probably bad in that. But he didn't discover gravity. I'm sure Adam did. I'm sure Adam knew that whenever he threw something in the air, it was going to fall back down. He learned that. He didn't sit down and make some kind of mathematical complication and thesis on it. But I'm sure that he knew that there was gravity. So it's nothing new under the sun.
This is where you're wanting us to go, but I think the verse with the nothing new, at least, I think that's something that's not used enough sometimes with Christians when we struggle with things. You know, lately, or I guess recently, you could deal with people, it's like, well, you can't understand what I'm going through, or unless you experienced it, how can you help me? Like, it's an individual thing, but the idea is broad in the sense. For us, for example, when we sin or we have struggles or we have problems, you know, the other people have the same problems and struggles. It might not be the same exact thing, but it's kind of parallels to Jesus and the temptations. Obviously, no one's offered the whole world to us, but we've been tempted with the pride of life and the different things. And I've always seen it as a broad category. But I think that's one thing that we read a lot and we study about how there's nothing new. But sometimes we want to think that our struggle and something and our problem maybe that we're dealing with, we don't want to maybe share it with people because they won't understand. or they won't really know how to handle it because they haven't done that with me or been like me or whatever. Sometimes we don't want to share with one another because we think we're the only ones dealing with it. And this verse, at least for me, reminds me of all the problems and struggles we're having. They're not new to other people either. Just like my parents, although I was a kid and I didn't think they knew what I was going through, they did the same thing because it was a different era and a different decade, but the same problem. And I think sometimes as Christians, we want to say this verse and read the verse, but sometimes we don't want to take it and act it as part of confiding in each other and helping each other out because people don't realize that our problem's not new. I don't know if that makes sense. It's kind of wordy.
It's a great lesson in and of itself, especially whenever you're dealing with class, whenever you're trying to teach people that are having issues and you're talking with people. I guarantee you, if you're teaching the gospel to the amount of people you should be in this life, you're going to come up on a lot of people that are having a lot of issues. They're going to feel they're not good enough. They're going to wait till I get my life straightened out. And even with what you said, you know, as a teenager and stuff, the problems that we go through, there's nothing new under the sun. And that goes with a lot of things and the different philosophies of life that we talk about. And people can have problems, and you may think your problem and your stuff is just brand new and whatever, and it's not. But, you know, all of the fixes for these issues are right here in this book. If people will study and read it and apply their life to it. Very good comment. Anyone else?
We even see a lot of examples throughout the Bible. Even Solomon himself, you know, the wisest man, but he didn't always take his own wisdom. You know, I mean, it's easy for us to give wisdom or advice to someone else. Sometimes we don't take that ourselves. So we have all of those examples, positive and negative, to look at and to see that, just like Kevin said, someone has dealt with a problem at least very similar to what we're experiencing. Some challenge, some temptation, whatever it is. And we can usually look in the Bible and find someone that's pretty comparable, you know, and study that example.
Very good.
Something that you said, and we'll talk about it more when we get into chapter 3 and 5, whenever he's talking more about his wisdom and the things that he decided to put his mind towards that pleasure, is that he didn't always use the wisdom that God gave him. I would think, you know, the first thing whenever he took an Egyptian wife, that was probably the first. And then after the second or third, fourth, fifth, sixth wife, moving on up to how many wives and how many concubines? I just don't imagine I just can't see the wisdom in that. I'm not trying to be ugly towards women. I'm just saying. I mean, it just, that's greedy.
Learned by school, hard knocks, we would say. You know, you live life, make mistakes, and you know, you pay the consequences.
Yeah, live life, make mistakes. Okay. There. We'll be studying in this same area next week. There's things that happen when we're born that just naturally occur. And God has provided for those things. Whenever you're hungry, there's food. Whenever you're thirsty, there's drink. There's water. Whenever you have loneliness, there's companionship. All the different urges and the needs of life, God has provided for it as we go through life. But yet, we turn around and we try to look for the meaning of life apart from God. And that's kind of what he's pointing out here. There's so many things that there is in life to enjoy and be thankful for. But if we are thankful for those things, even apart from God, and we don't give Him the glory, that too is vanity. Chasing after the wind. All of us, as we go through life, are going to be like a vapor. You see, here comes Duke's life, and here's the vapor, and then it goes away. Here comes my life, and it's vapor, and it goes away. Here comes Kevin's. I can say Kevin because it takes care of several of y'all, and then it goes away. But once your vapor goes away, you know, sometimes whenever you go into a kitchen and you can see the cooking going on, you see the steam and stuff rolling up and the vapors and all that. Once that vapor goes away, there's still a smell left behind for a while. And so as you go through life and your vapor goes out, you pass away, what kind of smell are you going to leave behind? And eventually that smell is going to go away also, which is kind of like the memory of even your life. And generations won't remember who Duke was, won't remember who I was. Now, with today's technology, they might be able to get on and see videos and all that of who they were. Makes it a little bit easier. But they're not going to know your essence. They're not going to know how you were, all of your different things that you've said and done. But those future generations can be affected by how you've lived your short life, because those future generations can either be living for Christ or they could be falling away. And maybe that's because of how you've lived your life, the influence that you've put forth. So think about that. Whenever we think, well, life's a vapor, I'm here, I'm gone, whatever, I'm not going to mean that much to that many people. That seems depressing. But look at the positive side. You're going to really affect a lot of people in a lot of generations whenever it comes to spirituality. Either a good way or a bad way. And we'll be held accountable for that. We need to make sure that as we go through life, that we do everything we can to make it not meaningless. Not a vapor that is just going to go away and we're not going to affect anybody. But that whenever we leave this earth, that there's a home in heaven waiting for us as we move on. And we sing a lot of songs about, you know, we're just pilgrims traveling through this land. We need to remember that every day. We're not guaranteed another day. We're not guaranteed that we'll make it home tonight. And so, I just don't want us to be depressed. I just want us to look at the positive side. Take what we have, run with it, but do it not under the sun, but above the sun, thinking about spiritual matters and thinking about what God would want us to do. How much time have I got? Looks like none. He's going for the buzzer. All right. We'll continue on with some thoughts next week. And I'll go ahead and I'll put number two questions in the back just so that you'll have them.